how are psychedelics and meditation related? They converge on the same brain system. Experienced meditators show reduced activity in the default mode network, DMN, the self-referential MPFC and PCC, Brewer et al. 2011, and psilocybin decreases activity in those exact hubs, with the drop tracking the intensity of the trip, Carhart-Harris et al. 2012. When the two are combined, psilocybin given inside a mindfulness retreat, the drug deepens self-transcendence and the brain change predicts better functioning months later, Smigielski et al. 2019. The honest framing, psychedelics may show you the state. Meditation trains you to live in it. For decades, the relationship between psychedelics and meditation was a matter of vibes and lineage. Ram Dass leaving Harvard's psychedelic labs for a Himalayan guru, Alan Watts warning that once you get the message, you should hang up the phone. It made for good stories, but not for science. Then brain imaging arrived, and something unexpected happened. Researchers studying deep meditation and researchers studying psilocybin, working in completely separate fields, kept describing the same neural event. Not a vague resemblance, it's the same specific network, quieting in the same specific way. The mystics had been pointing at the same mountain all along. Neuroscience just found the trailheads. The same quiet in two places. Start with the network itself. The default mode network, DMN, is the set of brain regions centered on the medial prefrontal cortex and the posterior cingulate cortex that hums whenever you are not focused on the outside world, when you are ruminating, planning, remembering, narrating your life to yourself. It is as much as anything in the brain, the machinery of the self-referential me. And it is the common target of both practices. In 2011, Judson Brewer and colleagues at Yale scanned experienced meditators across three different styles and found the same thing each time. Relative to novices, the meditator showed deactivation of the main DMN hubs, the MPFC and PCC, along with stronger coupling to the brain's cognitive control regions, a signature of reduced mind wandering, Brewer et al. 2011. A year later, Robin Carhart-Harris and colleagues at Imperial College scanned 15 volunteers under intravenous psilocybin and found that the drug decreased activity and connectivity in those very same hubs and, crucially, that the size of the decrease predicted the intensity of the subjective experience, Carhart-Harris et al. 2012. Two disciplines, two methods, one result. Quiet the DMN and the ordinary sense of self loosens its grip. What happens when you combine them? If the destinations overlap, the obvious next question is what happens if you take both roads at once? Two landmark trials have now done exactly that. The most elegant came from Zurich in 2019. Lukas Smigielski and Franz Vollenweider's team took 38 experienced meditators on a five-day mindfulness retreat and, on the fourth day, gave them a single oral dose of psilocybin under double-blind, placebo-controlled conditions. The psilocybin markedly increased self-transcendence, the oceanic boundlessness of ego dissolution, with unusually little anxiety, apparently buffered by the contemplative setting. In the scanner, the drug produced a decoupling of the front and back of the default mode network, the MPFC and PCC, and the degree of that decoupling tracked how completely a person's sense of self dissolved. Most striking of all, the extent of ego dissolution and the brain change predicted positive changes in psychosocial functioning 4 months later, Smigielski et al. 2019. The retreat did not just make the trip safer, it seemed to make it stick. UTW psilocybin mushroom treats. The second trial from Roland Griffith's group at Johns Hopkins ran the experiment over months instead of days. They gave healthy volunteers high-dose psilocybin paired with varying levels of spiritual and meditative practice support. At 6 months, the participants who received high doses and high support showed the largest and most enduring gains in gratitude, life meaning, forgiveness, interpersonal closeness, and daily spiritual experience, changes robust enough to be noticed by outside observers who knew them. And the two strongest predictors of lasting benefit were the intensity of the mystical experience and, tellingly, how much the person kept meditating afterward. Griffiths et al. 2018. The drug opened a door. The practice was what walked a person through it and kept it open. Different doors, overlapping room. Why should a molecule and a mental discipline land in the same place? The convergence is real, but the mechanisms could hardly be more different. Every classic psychedelic works pharmacologically as an agonist at the serotonin 5-HT2A receptor. Its potency across drugs tracks its grip on that one receptor. Meditation works through the opposite of a shortcut. Years of repeated attentional and metacognitive training, slowly reshaping the same circuits from the inside. One route is a key that fits a lock. The other is a path worn smooth by 10,000 repetitions. The framework that ties them together is the entropic brain hypothesis, which describes the psychedelic state as a higher entropy, more flexible, less rigidly self-organized mode of brain activity, one in which the DMN's usual top-down constraint on experience is relaxed. Carhart-Harris et al., 2014. Advanced meditation may reach a related state of loosened self-modeling, but by tuning the system deliberately rather than flooding it chemically. Same room, in other words, very different doors. Join the OTW sacrament, the oldest prayer remembered, the gentle dissolving of the self into light held in ceremony by a master facilitator. Sit with our community first, a free, live weekly circle on Zoom. No commitment, simply a conversation, show versus train. This is where the most useful distinction lives, and it is worth stating carefully because it is an interpretation, not a measured fact. A psychedelic can induce, show, a low DMN, low ego state in a single afternoon, a state that a meditator might reach only after years on the cushion. But the drug does not by itself give you any control over that state. It hands you the view without the skill. Meditation builds the opposite, a durable voluntary capacity to quiet the self, cultivated slowly and available on demand. The psychedelic is the glimpse. The practice is the mastery. The combination trials hint at why the two might be complementary rather than redundant. In both Smigielski's retreat and Griffith's practice-supported sessions, the drug's effects were amplified and made more lasting when embedded in contemplative training, as if meditation gives the psychedelic experience a container to be understood in. And the psychedelic gives the meditative path a vivid preview of where it leads. There is even a durable trace in personality. A single high dose of psilocybin has been shown to raise the trait openness, normally rock stable in adults, for over a year, but only in those who had a complete mystical experience, McLean et al., 2011. The glimpse, when it is deep enough, can leave a person permanently more open to the path. Where the paths diverge, and the honest cautions. It would be easy to over-romanticize this, so the philosophers who study it insist on a crucial caveat. In an influential 2018 review, Raphael Millière and colleagues argued that while psychedelic ego dissolution and meditative self-loss clearly overlap, phenomenologically and probably neurally, they are not simply the same experience. They differ in controllability, in content, and in which aspects of the self come apart. Millière et al., 2018. A drug-induced dissolution that arrives unbidden and fades in hours is not identical to the cultivated, stable equanimity of a lifelong practitioner, even if a brain scanner struggles to tell them apart in the moment. To mistake the glimpse for the mastery is a real error. And the cautions run deeper than semantics. The studies here are small and often use self-selected, experienced volunteers. Expectancy and setting effects in this field are large, and there is no pretending a pill substitutes for a path. Many contemplative traditions are explicitly wary of intoxicants, the Buddhist precepts among them, and hold that insight must be earned through practice to be stabilizing rather than destabilizing. That is a genuine live disagreement, not a settled question, and it deserves respect rather than a marketing answer. Psychedelics can also produce difficult experiences, and outside carefully controlled settings, they carry real risks. The oldest experiment. None of this is new, of course. On Good Friday in 1962, in the basement chapel of Boston University, a young physician named Walter Pankey ran a double-blind study. 20 divinity students received either psilocybin or an active placebo before a religious service. Those who got the psilocybin reported profound mystical experiences, and when Rick Doblin tracked them down a quarter century later, most still counted that afternoon among the most spiritually significant events of their lives. Doblin, 1991. The finding that a chemical could occasion a genuine mystical experience the same territory contemplatives spend lifetimes seeking, was the first hint of the convergence the brain scanners would later map. Perhaps the truest way to hold the relationship is not as competition, but as division of labor. The psychedelic is the flare that lights up the whole valley at once, showing you in an afternoon that the self you took to be solid is more negotiable than you knew. Meditation is the slow art of learning to walk that terrain in daylight, sober again and again, until the openness the drug revealed becomes a way of being rather than a memory. One shows, the other trains. The mountain is the same. What the science of the last 15 years has quietly established is that the mystics and the pharmacologists were all along describing the same summit, and that the most interesting question is no longer whether the two paths meet, but what each can teach a person willing to learn from both. Uta W. Journal is educational and does not provide medical advice. Psychedelics remain controlled substances in most countries and are not safe for everyone, including people with a personal or family history of psychosis or bipolar disorder, and those taking serotonergic medications. Nothing here is a recommendation to use any psychedelic. Meditation and contemplative practice are widely accessible and low-risk paths worth exploring on their own terms.